This is NPR's Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's time to welcome our special guest. She was a cast member on Saturday Night Live for 5 years, and now she created and stars in the new TBS series, Chad, where she portrays a 14-year-old boy navigating his first year of high school. It's Nassim Pedrad. Hello.
Hello. Thank you guys so much for having me.
I love talking to comics, comedians, actors about early gigs because they're always good fun. And I read that when you were starting out, you had a gig dressing up as Dora the Explorer and going to children's parties.
Starting out with a deep cut. Yes.
But I did. But I read that the company didn't really provide you with a decent costume.
No, they didn't. It was pretty... budget was always a concern with this company. And the vibe was basically like, are you a criminal? No? Cool. Do you want to work for these birthday parties? And that was all it took. But in my mind, I was like, you know, oh my God, like, will I get to play a princess? Can I be Princess Jasmine? Will I be in these like amazing costumes? And they were like, you're going to be playing Dora the Explorer, that like tomboyish child who's friends with a monkey, and you're going to have to figure out your own costume. So best of luck to you. I had a wig, which just looked like a short bob, and then pretty much just like short leggings and a t-shirt and a backpack from Target. It was
The backpack, the famous backpack.
Yes.
That's it.
Needless to say, parents were very disappointed when they opened the door and saw that they could have like asked a local cousin to do the same thing for free.
So you were born in Iran. You moved to the U.S. when you were three and grew up in California. And you and your sister both gravitated towards comedy. But not only that, succeeded. Your sister's a comedy writer. She's written for 30 Rock and New Girl. So, you know, how did that happen that both of you got interested in, you know, pursuing a career in comedy?
We truly have no idea, like coming from our parents who are funny, but like not intentionally funny. We had immigrant parents, so we didn't understand like what Hollywood or having a career in comedy even meant. I thought it would be cool to be a comedian in the way that it's like cool as a child to think of being an astronaut or Rihanna. Like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Is there a sign up sheet? Like, how do you do that? You know, you know, I won't speak for my sister, but she's just inherently, from the moment she could talk, was just born hilarious and funny. For me, you know, growing up, comedy was a way to belong because it really evens the playing field. If you can make someone laugh, it doesn't matter that you have a weird name or that you know, have parents that have an accent or that you're, you know, unique.
Yeah, acceptance.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I grew to find it.
So you sort of said your parents were funny, but not in the, like, was your, did you
like,
joke
we laugh
around
at the things that they say.
right.
I don't mean to sound rude. It's not like I'm laughing at them. I love them so much. But, you know, and they'll kind of laugh with us and not totally understand what's funny about it. And we're just like, but yeah, no, we grew up in a household that was always laughing. Like, they do sometimes intentionally make us laugh too. I don't mean to say that they have absolutely no sense of humor. But I mean, I had aunts and uncles. I was lucky enough to have a big Persian community made up of family, friends and relatives and distant, you know, cousins, and that were really silly and fun. And a few of my relatives were properly hilarious and would, you know, impersonate other family members. And I would just watch, you know, I had an aunt that was particularly hilarious, and as a kid, I would just watch her and like study her. And so I was lucky. I was surrounded by a lot of laughter.
And so, you know, you were on Saturday Night Live for 5 seasons and you were known for your impressions. Speaking of like studying people, Ariana Huffington, Kim Kardashian. And I read that when you auditioned with like 10 or more impressions.
Some impressions, some characters. I think I even did Kim Kardashian in my initial audition. I might have even done Dora, come to think of it.
Thought when you're doing that job, yeah, you thought it was just a dead end, but it was like, basically wait a second, how you, you got know, guys, your SNL job.
Thanks for making me realize I have a lot to be grateful for with that job. It did come full circle for me, I guess.
Right.
So your new show on TBS called Chad, you created it, you wrote it, you star in it, mm-hmm, you do all the things.
I do a lot of things.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because women voice boy characters all the time, like Nancy Cartwright in The Simpsons, but you don't see it in live action. How did you as an adult woman sell this?
Well, it wasn't a traditional pitch in the sense that I was already in a development deal with a network when I had the idea. They, I would assume, expected me to write a show where I'm playing a woman my own age. In their defense, that's a very reasonable assumption. And I was like, or I could play this 14-year-old boy. But it was a little scary to the network, maybe. You know, it is a bit of a swing. If you don't get people on board for that buy-in, how will the pilot, let alone the series, sustain that? To me, what was so interesting as an experiment was, what if we told a coming-of-age story where the teenager at the center of it was played by an adult who has the perspective that an adult has as to why teenagers are so funny, right? Like, teenagers don't know what's so funny about being a teenager. They're just sort of living it through. Right. They haven't had the luxury of being able to reflect on how, you know, ridiculous that time can feel, how terrifying it can feel. Funny moments get to be funnier and less sad if you're not sitting there laughing at an actual Iranian child. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does change the show. It changes the makeup of the show. If you were watching an actual teenager, it changes the experience, you know?
Yet the other cast are high school kids.
They are. And actors. That was so important to me, because to have the audience willing enough to suspend their disbelief that I'm Chad, it really was important to me to ground everything around Chad. And so not only did it help my performance, but I think it helps sell the show and the, you know, the premise of the show to have the actors around Chad be actual teenagers that are earnestly engaging with him and grounding him in a way, you know.
Yeah.
Because you just see them behaving completely as they would if they were acting opposite an actual 14-year-old child actor.
Yeah, and you know, Chad's personality is, well, he's desperate to be popular.
Yes, he's very,
you know, that's very yes, clear. But since we're talking about his character, what are some of the things that you are thinking about?
You know, like you said, he has this rigid determination to be popular. That's what he wants more than anything. But he's really his own worst enemy. Like, he gets in his way more than anyone. It's not a coming of age story where, you know, like in the more traditional sense, coming of age stories, a lot of, you know, ones that I grew up on, there was a bully, you know, and the main character was oftentimes actively being bullied, and that bully was the bane of their existence. But with this, I kind of thought it'd be more interesting to not have Chad be bullied, and you know, the cool kids around Chad are actually quite progressive and tolerant of him. They're pretty nice. They just kind of don't notice him, which to him is even worse somehow.
The worst.
But
yeah. So I also just have to ask you were in the live action remake of the Disney movie Aladdin in 2019, and your character Dahlia was the only new main character added to the adaptation. So, you know, did appearing in a huge Disney blockbuster kind of change your life?
Oh my gosh. It was definitely the biggest thing I had done in terms of scale.
Yeah.
I mean, I showed up on set and was like, wow, the money was spent, guys. The money, no corner of the set was spared. It was just, you know, I wasn't totally sure what to expect. I had put myself on tape and improvised a bunch of different versions and just, I gave them like different options. So by the time I got cast, I was like, what do they want me to do? which one, which take? And what I came to realize was that Guy Ritchie is just incredibly collaborative, and he insisted that we have these true rehearsals. Like, a lot of times when you're blocking for TV or film, it's not really a like an acting rehearsal. It's more of just like a blocking rehearsal, like go stand here, right. Say this line, go over here. But to his credit, like he it almost felt like we were rehearsing for a play every day. And I mean that in the best way. Like he really got into it and would ask us questions about where is this character at? What do they want? Like, what can we find on the day? So I didn't even know I'd get to do that. So it was really fun to be able to have that experience.
All right, Nassim, are you ready for an Ask Me Another challenge?
Let's do it.
Okay, so you told us that as a kid, you loved watching I Love Lucy.
I did. Oh, she was so good.
How did you come across that as the thing that you loved?
It was just on.
All the time?
All the time. And so it was just kind of a two-for-one in the sense that I was learning about comedy and literally how to speak English as well at the same time, because my parents were speaking Farsi or, you know, Persian to me, so that I didn't lose that either. And so some of my earliest memories of living in America is just like sitting down and watching I Love Lucy, and to, you know, see someone that funny and so ahead of her time, like for a woman to get to be that silly, you know, at the time that her show was on.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. And she was just obviously the best. Like, so I have a lot of nostalgia associated with the show. That being said, I also have a horrible memory. So let's see how I do on this quiz.
So, yeah. So based on that, we do have an I Love Lucy trivia game for you, because we were told that you can remember what happened at the end of almost every episode.
Who told you that?
Well, it's okay. It's all right. We're going to do this together.
We're going to make this work. Well, we're about to find out.
Yeah. So the game is, Jonathan and I will tell you how an episode of I Love Lucy begins, and then you tell us how that episode ends. So in the classic episode, Job Switching, Lucy and her best friend Ethel try to prove that they can work jobs while their husbands Ricky and Fred try to prove that they can do the housework. So Lucy and Ethel take jobs at a candy factory. Ricky and Fred attempt to cook. What happens? How does it end?
The belt speeds up.
Yes.
And they can't keep up with the chocolates that are flying by them. So am I wrong to say Lucy starts to eat them and shove them in her hat?
Yeah, that's all right. That is correct.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, do you remember what happens with Ricky and Fred?
Drawing a blank with those two on that episode. What happened with them?
They make a mess. They're terrible at cooking.
Oh, my
gosh. It's a catastrophe.
That was what my gut was telling me. I should have gone with it.
That's right. And then there's like a little moment. The button is that Ricky and Fred give Lucy and Ethel a 5-pound box of chocolate as a gift.
Oh, that's right.
And it's like, yeah, wait.
Remember this? It's like, remember this trigger?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right, here's another one. In Lucy Does a TV Commercial, Lucy gets a gig promoting a health supplement called Vitamita Vegemin. Yes, which contains 23% alcohol. The commercial is performed live during a musical variety show hosted by her husband, Ricky. How does this one end?
She gets wasted, right?
She gets wasted.
She gets wasted on live television.
That is correct.
And she starts slurring her words and it does not go well. Yes.
That is absolutely correct. And she, at some point, drunkenly interrupts Ricky's singing performance during the live broadcast.
Yes.
And he ultimately has to carry her off stage. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, come on.
I remember that performance. I'm like.
Really brilliant.
So good.
And yeah, that one is incredible. And actually, there's a world record. As you know, there's a lot of world records that Lucille Ball lookalikes love to try to achieve. And there was a world record for the most Lucille Ball lookalikes, which is 915, by the way. Just imagine that. Like, you know, in the way that one ladybug is sort of adorable, but like 915 would be frightening. But they are under a Vita Meta Vegemin sign in Jamestown. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right, I remember this one. In Ricky Has Labor Pains, Ricky starts developing the same symptoms as his pregnant wife. Nausea, dizziness, stomach pains. His doctor says it's because Lucy isn't paying enough attention to him. And he's feeling neglected. Lucy convinces her neighbor Fred to throw Ricky a daddy shower.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so surprised that this just didn't take off, by the way, the whole idea of a daddy shower.
A daddy shower.
And Lucy and Ethel get suspicious when they hear Fred refer to it as a stag party. How does it end?
How does it end? How does it end? Okay, so he had a baby shower.
A daddy shower.
A stag shower. I mean, I definitely don't remember this, but I'm just going to take a wild guess.
Did
the women dress up as men and show up? Yes? Am I right?
I mean, basically. Yeah.
Did they try to blend in by being one of the guys?
Yeah, they dress up as newspaper reporters that are supposedly writing a trend piece on daddy showers. So, yeah, that's exactly it.
And I wonder if that episode was reverse engineered. Like, if they started from, let's have Lucy show up.
Yeah, right, right.
In this, and then how can we get there? I wonder.
That's possible.
Oh, to have been a writer in that writer's room. What a fun room it must have been having someone like that.
All right, this is the last one. In Lucy and the Loving Cup, Ricky is hired to present a trophy honoring horse jockey Johnny Longdon. Lucy buys a new dress and a fuzzy hat for the event. Ricky thinks the new hat is ridiculous. How does it end?
Oh, I absolutely remember that clip of her getting her head stuck in it. Am I crazy?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Crazy. Yeah, it ends with the Ricky presenting the trophy to Johnny with Lucy.
That's right.
Still stuck. With the trophy on her head. And it is never in the episode revealed if she gets the trophy off.
They ran out of time. They had to cut the commercial. They didn't have time to wrap that up.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, that's the wrap.
Yeah, go out on the joke.
Go out on the joke, that's right.
Nassim Pedra's new TBS show, Chad, is out now. Nassim, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's our show. Ask Me Another's house musician is Jonathan Colton.
Hey, my name anagrams to Thou Jolt a Cannon.
Our puzzles were written by our staff, along with Madeline Kaplan, Kara Weinberger, Emily Winter, and senior writer Karen Lurie. Ask Me Another is produced by Travis Larchuk, Nancy Seychow, James Barber, Ramel Wood, and our intern, Sophie Hernandez Simeonitis. Our senior supervising producer is Rachel Neal, and our boss's bosses are Steve Nelson and Anya Grunman. We'd like to thank our production partner, WNYC. I'm her ripe begonias.
Ophira Eisenberg.
And this was Ask Me Another from NPR.